Card presents Back Issue Bloodbath with your hosts, Andrew Young and Petula Neal.
Baby, I hear the blues are calling for arrows and scrambled eggs. This is Back Issue Bloodbath. I'm Andrew Young.
And Petula Neal.
And this week, we are looking at a miniseries that not only launched the first ever Green Arrow ongoing series, but also showed that the character had a longevity and a fan base, and also really is a reflection of the time that it came out. Plus, it made Seattle kind of a scary place to live when you look at this story. And that is Green Arrow, the Longbow Hunters from 1987, written and drawn by Mike Grell, with colors by Julia Lacquema, I believe is how the name is pronounced.
Mm.
And it was a 3-issue miniseries. Last week on the show, we brought up Batman The Dark Knight Returns. And Batman The Dark Knight Returns, when it came out, it was a huge hit at the exact same time, or roughly around the same time. Watchmen came out, also another huge hit. And these were superhero stories that were deconstructing the idea of being a superhero, and also were showing a darker nature, a more mature theme to its storytelling. And because these two books were so popular, not only in all of comics, but specifically at DC, there was kind of a push at this time in the late 80s to begin telling edgier stories with more street-level heroes that have a bit more cynical edge to them. And during this time, it was pitched, hey, we should do a Green Arrow miniseries in that kind of vein. And they brought Mike Grell in to do the book. And what followed is that it became one of their mature reader titles. And the book was written and drawn by Mike Grell. And given, like, even though it is hand-drawn, given almost kind of like a pastel painting feel to it.
Initial thought was, oh my God, I wish I had my Laurentian pencil crayons. Like, but it's almost like pencil crayons, but on canvas, because it has like a texture.
Yeah. Very much like a non-painted painted work. That's what it kind of feels like. And it kind of gives like sort of a classiness to its look and feel, which is a really interesting juxtaposition to their subject matter, because their subject matter is gritty and dark and like in your face. And so you have this really debonair looking book dealing with things like brutal murder and rape. So you're dealing with the most disgusting things you can think of, but in a book where even the darkest dungeon looks like something out of, like the actual classic Robin Hood tales, you know, like that kind of like almost fantastic. And it's such an odd juxtaposition that works so well.
Like, yeah, the meetup on the murder mountain, there's like a panel that's just, let me show you Bob Ross could never. It's just the most beautiful, like the trees reflecting in the water. It reminds me of like the first time I ever went to Whistler, and I told my friend, well, damn girl, if you told me you lived inside a postcard, I would have come here sooner. Like literally that gorgeous. And then like 2 pages later, it's like just the most naked sort of, you know, no backgrounds, like arrow on arrow action, like stuff piercing through like bodies and eyes. Yeah. They're all over the place. I love it. It's wild. They're wild for this. Yeah. It's violent. And then you'll just stop and like, let me just do a whole panel of eyes. Like that kid you would sit next to in school who you knew would like end up probably doing something with art, and they would just like spend the whole class like drawing eyes and hands like some kind of serial killer. Yeah.
Well, I can assure you Mike Grell, not a serial killer, but when you look at some of the subject matter in his stories, if that came from a high schooler, you'd probably get worried. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Parent teacher night would be like, just throw the drawings down. Like you're in a police interrogation room.
Yeah.
Like we need to talk about Kevin.
Oh, but yeah, no, this book though, it kind of redefines Oliver Queen and would go on to make a lot of cultural touch points within his character. Like, of course, before this, he had never had his own ongoing series. He'd always been a part of a team or a feature or a duo. Of course, probably the closest thing to a series he had before that was Green Lantern, Green Arrow, which was seen as by publishers, Green Lantern is the star and Green Arrow is the guest star in every issue, even though they've got pretty much equal billing. And in that, of course, he was set up to be very liberal, like a lot of the personal views of Green Arrow were set up in that book. Kind of the hot-headedness. I'd say right there also is the passionate side of Green Arrow is set up at that point. The fact that he's a ladies' man in a sense, even though back at that point he was only with Black Canary, they kind of gave the vibe that he was a man that did well with the ladies. So all that stuff was set up. In this book, you get the character with all that stuff there, but stripped down. He's no longer a millionaire. He's no longer using a buffet of trick arrows, like boxing glove arrows and things like that. He's going back to cold steel on the end of his arrow tips, and also with a birthday gift from Black Canary, kind of much more of a naturalistic look to him. Gone is the straight out of Errol Flynn Robin Hood Adventures look, and now a much more like he wears a hood, like an actual hood, so more of the traditional Robin Hood style, with, although not a bright green, kind of more of a hunter green mixed with like a brown, so almost like a camouflage in a sense on the look. And he and Dinah have moved to Seattle to start fresh, originally planning to not take themselves so seriously in the superhero game anymore.
Yeah, and they're both just doing more, like not more, but more of a mix of detective work.
Yeah.
And they're not in full costume all the time.
That's right. That's right. They're going now to solving street level crime. So not superhero adventures, more what's happening on the streets. How can I make the city I live in a safer place? Which, of course, is always the theme of a superhero. But when you've been somebody who's been in the Justice League of America, it's kind of thought, oh, you're going to go fight Sinestro or Merlin or Solomon Grundy. But no, in this case, they're looking at crime on the streets. Drug dealers, rapists, killers, that sort of thing.
War criminals. Old war criminals, but still.
Yes.
They deserve to die. Well. Yes. And I hope they burn in hell. Yeah.
Thank you, Samuel. But yeah, and so what happens is that Oliver and Dinah each go on their own, like, case. And Oliver's trying to find who this Robin Hood killer is. A particular killer is going across the country and killing off older gentlemen.
Well, first she tries to find the slasher who gets killed by...
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Yes, yes.
We forget about the slasher because there's just so much violence against women in this. It's like, what's another dead prostitute? Which is pretty much what the police thought in the first issue.
That's pretty much, yeah. There is a slasher on the loose in Seattle who's killing women. And Oliver Queen wants to find...
And kills an undercover cop.
Yes, kills an undercover
cop.
Which
we breeze right by that. Like, listener, if you are aware of the story, we are aware. It's not great for ladies in this one. Yeah. Some tough times. Yeah.
It was the 80s.
Yes.
The 80s were a time where women were cannon fodder in these types of stories, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like 20 episodes of SVU all jammed into one.
So Ollie Queen he's looking for the slasher. The slasher ends up getting taken out by the Robin Hood killer, basically because the slasher ended up in the Robin Hood killer scene, and the Robin Hood killer went, oh, well, you're a terrible person. I can't let you live, but I'm still going to do my thing, but I'm going to make sure you die as well. And so that changes Oliver's mission. He now wants to find out who the Robin Hood killer is, because now the Robin Hood killer is in his city.
He is torn because he's trying not to murder or condone murder. However, the Robin Hood killer kind of keeps killing people that he's all right with them being dead.
Totally understood. Yes. Because as you mentioned, this has to do with war criminals. And that ends up being their connection, a connection that nobody can really figure out until later on. Because other than that, the only thing that was linking all these people was that they were men of a certain age, an older man, someone who could have had a war record, but
for some reason it looked like they hadn't served because they'd wiped their time of service because they'd done sketchy stuff and also had worked in internment camps. See our episode if you can still find it on They Called Us Enemy.
Right. I don't know if that episode is still available, but maybe eventually we'll be able to make it available again. That becomes Ollie's mission, is to find out who the Robin Hood killer is, possibly take them down, possibly find out why they're doing this. At the same time, Dinah goes on her own investigation, trying to shut down a drug dealer in the area. She unfortunately does not have as good of a situation going as Ollie does. She gets caught, and the drug dealers call in basically a sick torturer and just a vile human being, someone who gets off on the pain of others. And that is what leads to like the big turning point in Ollie's life, because Ollie does find where they're keeping Dinah, and for the first time ever, Ollie breaks his own rule and he kills. And this is important because this is the first time he's ever killed someone, and it becomes something that he ends up not having a problem with. Of course, I think the fact that it had to be with someone that he truly cared about, someone he loved, being hurt and tortured and almost killed, that in his mind was like, that's what helped him cross that line. It was an instinct reaction. But eventually through time, as it would go through the Mike Grell series, that this miniseries launched, he would become more of a vigilante, which kind of fit with the time. And again, these Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen kind of darker stories. And it also set up that Black Canary was greatly affected by this. She ended up having a long run within the ongoing series dealing with this. In the miniseries, of course, though, because you've got a limited page space, we don't get to see that work getting done for either of them, really. Because as soon as that beat is done and set up and established within them, Ollie has to continue figuring out, well, what am I going to do with this Robin Hood killer who he now has seen her in action? Her name is Shadow, and she is someone who is working with the Yakuza and has a Yakuza tattoo, which is why, you know, a way that he's able to do some detective work, track down, gain more information. And he's still, even though he's now killed someone who deserved it, he doesn't 100% know if he can go down the path that Shadow's gone down. Because Shadow is a true blue definition of vigilante killer. Or even more than that, revenge killer.
It's very Oren Ishii. It's giving every Asian woman that Wolverine meets has some connection to organized crime. However, love her. Love her energy. Love her discipline. Love her look. But it's 100% like, this feels a little bit off. But I'm not going to say I'll allow it because it's not my space to allow it. But I do like that they give us the Japanese internment camp story sort of in parallel to this. So the rationale isn't just regular random Yakuza comic book nonsense. Mm-hmm. It's rooted in like just wrong place, wrong time. Like,
right.
Her dad was just like a money launderer, basically, and ended up in America right around the time when they were scooping people up. And they found out that he had all this money that he was supposed to bring to North America for the Yakuza. And they, obviously, she doesn't get to see her parents again, but she gets to immediately enroll in a great assassin internment program as a literal child.
Yeah, exactly. The Yakuza want her to go and kill these people because
you have one job. Yeah, revenge for your family.
Exactly. Revenge for your family, because they say that will make up for the disgrace your father was, because their father is considered a disgrace to the Yakuza. But personally, Shadow wants to kill these people because they are the reason why she does not have a family. So it is personal for her. It's business for the organization that she's connected with. But while the organization's connection is not like a righteous motivation, her personal journey is a righteous motivation. So you can see she is an anti-hero, as opposed to just being an antagonist or rival for Green Arrow. And she's one of the most interesting characters that came out of this. Of course, she would be further developed during Mike Grell's run on the book. And also, there is a brief setup of another character that became a big part of Mike Grell's run, Mr. Eddie Fires, who's a contract killer for hire. He gets a very small part near the end of the book during a shootout, and he's basically who the bad guys call in as kind of a countermeasure to Shadow. Both of these characters would end up having rich stories told about them during Michael's run. Shadow has an amazing introduction here. Eddie Fires, not so much, but it's interesting to note that he is introduced in this book. And of course, this is the book that kind of made Green Arrow a success story at DC. Because when the book launched in 88, it would run all the way until 98. Of course, Mike Grell would be on the book till 93. After 93, not always the greatest stories, as of course we've mentioned. We did the Where Angels Fear to Tread storyline, which introduced Green Arrow's son, Connor Hawk, as the new Green Arrow. Very painful to get through that stuff. But Mike Grell's,
I mean, we learned in this run, we shouldn't be having kids. Because that was the other part of his character development. It wasn't just, you know, oh, murder's okay sometimes. It also, we have the moment where he finally listens to what Dinah wants to do with her body. And what she wants to do with her body is not make orphans. So the I want to have kids, I don't want to have kids conversation that more couples should have earlier. When they're having that conversation, initially he is not listening and doing the, well, I'll convince her, everybody. And then just throughout these three issues, he's like, she might have a point there. And I think it's not just their conversation, what happens throughout the story and what happens to her. It's also seeing what happened to Shadow.
Yeah.
It's like any child of theirs may end up growing up to just have like one job, which is vengeance for whoever kills them because of what they do.
Right. Exactly. And it's that kind of storytelling that kind of sets the tone for Grell's run on Green Arrow, because he decides, I'm not going to have these characters be heroes. I'm going to have them have shades of gray to them. And
we're going to have them dress up in their old work costumes to have sex on a weekend after.
Okay, so that's fun. That's fun.
She cosplays as herself. Like, oh, I didn't know you still had that outfit.
Yeah, it is the moment of fun before we get all the death and violence that comes after that. It is the one happy moment for these two within the entire book.
Again, many sex workers were murdered before that moment.
That's why I said like it was the one moment. It's the one moment.
Before. It was like a little like a breather of good times and then more death and murder.
Right. The bulk of the murder and violence happens after it. It's like page 12 of the first issue. Okay. Sorry, I was not super specific on the spot, but regardless.
I am just, unlike the police in the story, very aware that they had no care at all. And then also that one of the last murders is clearly a copycat from one of their pimps. It really just gets dusted under the carpet. Like, he identifies that in the crime report, but they don't do anything with it. And it's the most realistic portrayal.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. It's nothing here is rose colored glasses. And what I'm trying to say is that not even the main characters, as the Grell series would go on,
he keeps the money. I love that. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, he keeps the money.
So bad.
Yeah.
He's so bad.
No, he keeps the money. And like, that's the thing. It's like, it's very much like a lethal weapon. You know, this money's drug dealers. It's made by drug dealers. Well, take it and do something good with it. You know, that kind of argument. But this time the hero does take it and do something good with it. But throughout Grell's run, Ollie Queen is not a quote unquote good guy. Like, he ends up having an affair on Dinah. And that really has problems with, like, he is shown not as a man with high moral value for his personal actions. Whereas he has, you know, the strong moral beliefs of, you know, everybody has a right to be clothed and, like, you know, we've got to help minorities, like people of color, we got to help our fellow man, all the, like all the good things that you want to stand for. But in his personal life, he is flawed. He's flawed. Like, it's not something you wouldn't see Superman cheat on Lois Lane. You wouldn't see the Flash cheat on his wife, you know, but you see Green Arrow, which is what makes the character compelling, is that he is a mess as a human being, but as a vigilante hero, he's trying to do the best he can. And that was something that was strong established in the book throughout Grell's run. And it's set up here, as you mentioned, with the keeping the money from the drug deal gone wrong. And, you know, also now killing and not having remorse for it sort of thing because it's justified. These are the shades of gray areas that he introduces in Green Arrow, which would forever change Green Arrow, so much to the point that when Kevin Smith came on the book, there's a whole storyline where Oliver Queen didn't want to go back, didn't want to resurrect himself, but wanted to resurrect a better version of himself, one that hadn't killed and things like that. And so this is probably one of the most important Green Arrow stories because it creates new definition for the character. And these are things that have now stayed with the character even all these years later.
Yeah, this is definitely the HBO version of Green Arrow, yeah. Not the CW version.
No, definitely not the CW version. Oh, man. But overall, like, I feel like while it's dark and it deals with a lot of dark themes, which is something I did mention to you before we read it, that this isn't the regular Green Arrow that one might expect, I feel like it's very compelling. It's something that really made the character stand out, not just feel like a Batman clone, you know?
Yeah, he's a mess. I love him. Yeah. And also that he realizes he needs to get back to basics. He needs to get back to training.
Yes.
That while being marooned on that island, because there's always an island, might not have been the best time. He really got to work on his fundamentals. And he needs to get back to like more of a clean training regime.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. But yeah, for you though, like, again, I think we kind of touched on this, you know, this is your first time reading the series. What were your initial thoughts to this kind of take on Green Arrow?
Well, halfway through, I was like, oh, I think Boyfriend had the physicals of these.
Oh, yeah?
When he was young and they were at his place. So I think I read at least the first one.
Okay.
Before. And definitely, I would recommend reading all three of these together. Because just reading the first one is, and maybe that's why I keep going back to the sex workers. It's like, oh, this is just, they're just murdering a bunch of women. And then he gets the bonus girlfriend. Like, I wasn't really loving it. Like, you need to read all three.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need the whole story for context. Definitely. Definitely. But after reading this, would you be interested in reading the ongoing series that came after this? Would it compel
yes,
you?
Yes, with an asterisk. Okay. I do. I think that there's a certain kind of, yes, it's this era, but there's just so much back catalog stuff out there. I would definitely probably not like go straight through it like other things where I start binging comic books like TV shows. If it is going to be, you know, sort of every, you know, 2 to 3 issues, there's a bunch of horrendous violence against women. Like,
I will say
occasionally
ongoing,
I need a breather from that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah. The ongoing, I will say the ongoing series, not as hardcore as this 3-issue miniseries. Still, you know, still mature reader, at least for the run of, actually, I don't know if Grail's entire run was mature reader. I think maybe near the end of the run.
Yeah, I love an arrow through an eye. I loved all the old men getting murdered. That was fun.
Oh my God. But yeah, I feel like by the end of the run, like the issue 80 of his run, I don't know if it was still as hardcore. And as I said, this is the most hardcore of that story as well. So yeah, so it's something that if you were interested in checking out, people, bear in mind there is a lot of killing. There is, as you mentioned, the murder of multiple sex workers. There is a torture scene involving Black Canary.
She's not wearing much when she's found either, so let's just throw a little essay on that as well. Just trigger warnings up the wazoo for this one.
Yeah. But again, like it is a compelling story. I feel like it's an important part of Green Arrow's minutia.
And it's gorgeous. It's literally gorgeous. It is just some beautiful.
Of Mike Grell's best work, definitely. So I think definitely worth checking out, again, with those caveats. Totally. All right. Well, we've come to the end of another episode of Back Issue Bloodbath. Patula, where can they find you?
At inatif.com on socials. At obesacantavit, obesacantavit, and here with you.
And of course, you find everything I do over at geekardshow.com. Follow me on Twitter at geekard. Follow me on Instagram at Andrew_of_geek_hard. Of course, you can follow this very show on Facebook at Back Issue Bloodbath, where we post a new episode every week. And please, folks, if you want to make sure you don't miss an episode, subscribe to us in your podcasting platform of choice. And, you know, then go out and tell your friends about it. And, you know, then maybe after you tell them about Back Issue Bloodbath, maybe treat them to like a meal or do something nice. Do something nice for your friends. Do something nice for your family. Just do something nice for each other. People, do nice things for each other and have a good day. This has been Back Issue Bloodbath. I've been Andrew Young.
I've been Petonio.
Have yourself a good.